Good afternoon. It's a Juno afternoon here, a snowy, beautiful winter Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And today we've got a nice full show. We're going to be talking to folks from AWARE about a new six-week series entitled Racial Equality and Liberation. It's going to be starting next week. We're also going to be talking to John Neary and Jim Beadle about the Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Tom Matisse and Mike Richardson will be here to talk about avalanches. We're going to be celebrating the 10th anniversary of K3. Yes, KRNN and KXLL are 10 years old today. And we're also going to be talking to a bunch of nonprofit local organizations who are all taking part in the Pick, Click, Give program. That's all coming up, plus Bird Note music and more on this snowy afternoon edition of Juno Afternoon. First, here's National Native News.
Food sovereignty projects across the country are helping tribes provide traditional foods to their communities as Native Americans continue to face high rates of obesity, diabetes, and other diseases. Health professionals point to a lack of access to fresh, healthy foods as a contributing factor. In our USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism series, we take a look at an effort in New Mexico to help community members grow traditional crops. Farmers Bailey Morgan and Emilio Bailon clean seeds using their bodies and fans to get debris off the seeds. The two men oversee a seed bank and Pueblo farm at Tezuque Pueblo in New Mexico. Morgan, a member of the tribe, says the seed bank began nearly a decade ago with a small storage space on the Pueblo and eventually evolved into a two-story building, which today houses seeds from tribes across the country.
It's like how you have water protectors, you have seed protectors, and that's what we are. Maintaining your traditional seeds, planting them every year, and just, you know, making sure that they're taken care of. Just like we built this for the seeds. This is their home.
Bologna is Inca from Bolivia. He says preserving seeds has long been important to indigenous people worldwide.
I would say to you, our ancestors, for thousands of years, look, the Hopi, Quechua people, any indigenous people, they have his seeds for thousands of years.
The men not only strive to protect traditional seeds, they also share knowledge about organic farming methods with school children, tribal members, and international visitors. A short walk from the seed bank are plots of land for members to farm, a fruit orchard, and greenhouses with herbs, fruits, and vegetables. Traditional crops like corn, beans, and squash have long been staples to Pueblo people. But Morgan says the arrival of settlers and modern busy lives have changed the way his fellow tribal members eat today.
People are easily, you know, going to go to the store and buy the products that are available to them at the stores instead of farming the fields. People work eight hours a day and then, you know, they don't want to go home and prepare meals. They can easily just go and get fast food, and, you know, that's made an impact here.
Like other Native nations across the country, Morgan says diseases linked to food choices, such as diabetes, are common in his community. He'd like to see that addressed through incorporating more traditional foods into daily life. And he says traditional farming is part of the health and wellness of communities.
Being a Pueblo man, that's, you know, first and foremost of what I believe is going back to the land and taking care of it. You know, our ancestors left it for us, and so it's our duty to go ahead and keep it going, you know, for future generations.
A six-year program with 17 tribes through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found potential new opportunities for using traditional foods to address chronic illness and improve health outcomes. A bill to federally recognize six Virginia tribes passed the Senate Thursday and was sent to the president's desk. The tribes have been seeking the status for decades. Among benefits, if signed into law, it would grant the tribes legal standing with the U.S. government and allow tribes to access federal programs. The tribes do have official recognition with Virginia. The Tulsa World reports the Cherokee Nation plans to pursue its opioid case in state court after a federal judge ruled this week the tribe cannot go after major corporations in tribal court due to jurisdiction. The Oklahoma tribe is accusing drug companies and distributors of not preventing the flow of illegally prescribed drugs to Cherokee citizens. The tribe says it's fighting widespread abuse of opioids. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism's MA in Social Journalism, rethinking journalism as a community service. Application deadline is January 5th at journalism.cuny.edu. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. Pick, click, give. A great and easy way to support nonprofits in Alaska. You simply donate during your PFD application process. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. One of those organizations that you can pick, click, give for is represented by a couple of folks that are in the studio with me right now. AWARE is the organization, and Adi Nasia and Jesse Morgan are here from AWARE. Thanks for coming in to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and actually we're going to talk to a whole bunch of other nonprofits later on in the show who all participate in Pick, Click, Give, which is a awesome program, I think, for a lot of the nonprofits in Alaska. But we wanted to talk specifically about a really cool program, a kind of six-week, six-part program that you are undertaking that is specifically talking about racial equality and liberation of some of the kind of things that have, you know, kept us bound in our culture and our society in America and in Alaska for a long time. Is that a good intro?
Yeah. Thanks so much. Yeah, the Juneau Violence Prevention Coalition is really excited to invite individuals, organizations, community members across Juneau to come together and join with us on a racial equity and liberation learning journey. Over the last number of years, as we've been dreaming up a community free of violence, we keep really coming back to these root causes of violence and looking at systems of oppression and how these systems perpetuate inequity and perpetuate communities where violence is thriving. And so as we envision a community where organizations like AWARE aren't in such great need, we're challenging ourselves and we're inviting others to also do that deep work and self-reflection around understanding racial equity, understanding racism and sexism,
also learn some good practices for unpacking some of these issues in ourselves and move towards equity, safety, and decolonizing our practices a little bit.
That's an interesting term, decolonizing our practices. That's a really, I think that's got a lot of power to it when you think about that. And I think it kind of speaks to the idea of, okay, so statistically, we all know that, you know, rates of domestic violence in Alaska are pretty high, right? They're statistically pretty high when you compare to the rest of America. It's happening. It's been that way for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You are both on the front lines of sort of really dealing with a lot of the symptoms of those. But then there's must be these underlying causes that are root causes, and kind of digging into that. And so that's an interesting thing, because I would think that a lot of people must be pretty defensive about that in a way. You know, people aren't typically thinking so much about what culturally is the thing that leads you to have higher rates of these incidences, right? Am I right on that? I guess I feel like there could be sensitivity there.
I think it can be scary,
mm-hmm.
and it can be hard to reflect around our own histories. I mean, I'm a woman with white skin who's experienced race privilege, and to do my own work around understanding my people's history, my unearned privilege, the power that sits at my lap, and reflecting around what does it mean to have for all of us, women of color, for white women, what does it mean to have inherited these systems that, for the most part, are inherently racist and mm-hmm. sexist? And what does it mean to inherit them without that sense of shame? Like, I'm... But to know that I am a gatekeeper to certain organizations. I'm a gatekeeper at AWARE. I'm a gatekeeper through my work with the Violence Prevention Coalition. And so my invitation for myself and for others is really about, opening to transform myself and through that work to also transform the community. And one of the first concepts that we'll explore at the workshop will be really looking at how systems of oppression disconnect us from our source. They, we disassociate from our bodies when we experience violence and oppression and trauma. Systems of oppression teach you to distance yourself from feeling and emotion.
In what way? Describe what you mean by that. Or maybe, Jesse, how would you describe what that means? You were sort of nodding along when Adi was saying that.
Yes, oftentimes when we think through a colonial lens, we feel shame and fear about our emotions and expressing them because there's not always a positive reaction or way to work through them. So I think that's a byproduct of oppression.
So these discussions that you're going to have, who is the audience you're trying to reach? Who do you think are the people that you want to really reach out to?
We've invited individuals and organizations across Juneau, and we invite the greater community to join us. And they can join us on Fridays and have lunch together or work on their own individual paces if they're interested in getting involved.
And so it's a 6-week program. Are there different speakers, or is there sort of a set? Is there kind of an agenda set up to kind of progressively talk deeper and deeper about this issue? Is that the idea?
Yeah, we've adopted this virtual learning series from Move to End Violence, which is an initiative out of Washington, D.C. It's called Racial Equity and Liberation. So they've created a 6-part series with prompts, videos, and discussion points to learn about some practices towards equity.
So it's a pre-recorded series that others, if you can't join us on Fridays, we encourage you to engage in the conversation. And when you ask, who is this for, my sense is that we have all inherited this world in its preciousness and its beauty and in its horrific devastation. And it's ours. And if we don't actively work to dismantle systems of oppression, they are inherently perpetuated, whether people realize it or not. And so we're saying this is all of our work. This is our world. This is our grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren's world. And it desperately needs for us to do that work of, reconnecting with and reclaiming people's full stories, not one story.
That's such a really powerful message, because so often you kind of think, well, the fix is in, this is just the way it is. Those kinds of things, because the world is this, we often feel so small and powerless to change big systemic things in the world. But it is utterly true that the place that we live in is made up of us.
It's us.
Right.
It's us. And when we are disassociated from our bodies, we can't live and breathe and heal. And so how do we reclaim our bodies? How do we re-engage with our emotions and have the hard conversations and look deeply and connect deeply? How do we reconnect with our sense of source and strength to find that inspiration and motivation to change those systems and those places, whether it's the work of our own self-talk with ourselves, whether it's interrupting or questioning with curiosity someone's thinking around a particular topic. And the framing of this dialogue or this series is that it is really it really comes about in a way that creates a safe space. It's not about shame. It's not about pointing fingers. It's not about blame. It's about healing, and it's about each of us finding our place in that story of healing together.
Well, Jesse, if folks want, go ahead. You're going to say something.
So some of the practices that we'll learn include locating oneself, and moving beyond single stories, which are harmful, recognizing that everyone has different experiences and layers of their experiences. We'll learn how to choose vulnerability and identify systems of power and complex levels of racism, and how to engage the community in these conversations. So,
wow. And so if folks want to get interested in this and want to participate, how can they go about doing that?
Well, our first meeting is on next Friday at noon at Northern Light United Church, and I'm asking interested participants to contact me. My name is Jesse Morgan. I'm the Community Restoration Coordinator at AWARE, and my email address is jessiemmorgan@awareak.org, or you can reach me on the phone, 586-4902. We're also on Facebook. You have an event that you can join or via our website. So,
to follow up, on Facebook, it's Juno Violence Prevention Coalition, and it's an upcoming event there. And so if you RSVP, then we'll make sure to have enough lunch for you.
Oh, well, there you go.
so we're really wanting to create a safe space where people can connect and learn and listen and share food. And if you have to miss one of those six because you'll be traveling, you could do it on your own but still rejoin the group. Or if you don't want to sit in community space but you want to make this journey, we welcome you to do that as well, whatever you feel inspired to do.
So each time you meet, you could sort of consider it almost a class or a discussion, lecture kind of thing. And then is there some homework, and is there some work in between that you're asking people to do as well? Yeah,
very little, but I'll let you speak a little more to that.
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing process for sure, and just some good practices to keep in mind and as we work in our different organizations.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, it's starting next Friday on the 17th. 19th, sorry, on the 19th. It goes from noon to 1:30. It's happening every Friday for the next 6 weeks then. It's over at Northern Light United Church over there in the flats, and it's about racial equality and liberation. It's a six-part series, and all people are asked to come and enjoy this and learn from it and participate in this kind of, as you call it, a journey, and it's a virtual learning experience, as it's said here. But it's really fascinating to have this kind of forward-thinking dialogue kind of brought here locally to this community, and AWARE is such a great organization to bring this here. So thanks so much for doing it.
We're really excited.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks both for coming in, Audie and Jesse, and have a great 6-week class.
Thank you.
Do all your homework.
So
and, you know, there you go. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Joined now by Tom Matisse. And Tom was here to talk about an avalanche workshop, but unfortunately, Mike Richardson, who was going to come up and talk, didn't make it to town, right?
Got held up.
So the avalanche workshop that was going to be at Rockwell tonight has to be canceled.
It does.
So we're announcing that right now. So if you are looking forward to that, because it does sound fascinating and very worthy of learning about, unfortunately, that's going to have to be at least postponed, if not canceled. And but you have other really good news. So let's talk about some of the stuff happening up at Eagle Crest.
Well, we're excited to announce that just got notice PSA sent out from Eagle Crest. Looks like they're going to be spinning the ptarmigan chair tomorrow so we can get public up on the hill from 9 to 3 tomorrow. Obviously, it's advanced skiers only. There could be a lot of debris, especially on mid to lower mountain, but they're doing their best to get you up on the hill. So if you've got a pass and you want to get up there, please do.
But on that first run of the year, let's talk a little bit about safety considerations that people should have in mind.
Safety first. You know, at the bottom of the mountain, there's almost no snow other than the man-made. The middle of the mountain is really the most treacherous, where the man-made snow can't quite get up to, and Mother Nature hasn't quite done her job yet. So you'll find the turns are great off the top of the mountain, but you need to keep your speed in check because there's hidden obstacles barely under the surface and visible obstacles as well. So bring your rock skis, be safe. Be looking for those kinds of things and keep your speed down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. You go to Eagle Crest. When you go berry picking up at Eagle Crest, that's when you really realize how gnarly the middle of the mountain is, right? It's really a bunch of obstacles waiting to really get you if there's not enough snow cover.
No, that's for sure. So they, with the new snow that we have coming in overnight, they want to make sure people are aware that uphill traffic will be closed in the morning from 6 a.m. on. There's not going to be any uphill traffic. After they get the blasting done, they're going to go ahead and get the east side of the mountain open. The west side will be closed, but then there will be some uphill routes open after that time. So just if you are an uphill hiker, look for the notices around the base area, and they'll tell you which trails are open. But we look forward to seeing the chairs spinning and lots of smiling people.
And I know the workshop's not happening, but what are some of the kind of general considerations people should be thinking about as avalanche season's kind of upon us?
Well, you know, just as a classic example here, we're looking at a little bit of snow today that's been sitting on cold, cold earth from the last week. So that clear, cold weather probably left some facets up there in the snowpack. This new light, light snow is probably not going to bond real well, and then we're going to be putting heavier and wetter and heavier and wetter snow on top of it. So we have the classic buildings of an avalanche cycle coming up. By later tomorrow, you're going to see freezing levels increase. You could see 1.5 to 3 inches of rain by Sunday with freezing levels all the way up to 5,000 feet. So that's a perfect storm for avalanches. It's coming in on cold base with facets, and it's going to be an upside-down snowpack putting bricks on top of champagne glasses, and
yeah,
won't take much to bring it down.
Right. So what are some of the things? Just stay on the marked trails, those kind of general safety?
Especially for the chair spinning tomorrow, you know, stay on the marked trails, be looking for debris, keep your speed down. If you do end up going backcountry skiing and heading out there, remember in the high alpine, anywhere there's snow currently, there's going to be avalanche conditions tomorrow in the next couple days. So
okay.
Be thinking about safety.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, Tom, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know. Sorry that the workshop got closed. If it gets rescheduled, please let us know. So once again, just making that announcement that the avalanche workshop that was to be held tonight at Rockwell had to be canceled because Mike couldn't make it into town. But on the plus side, ptarmigan chair open tomorrow, 9 to 3 p.m. That's great news for all the skiers and snowboarders out there who are who've been itching to get up that hill. But it is the first day of that happening, so mind the especially the middle of the mountain, as you say. It's really good advice to make sure that you're keeping your speed under check as you're liable to encounter at least a few obstacles as you get into the middle of the mountain. All right. Thanks so much, man, for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having
me. Okay, no problem. My life just Well, guys, it seems like just yesterday we were in these three studios. They looked a little different back then, but we were celebrating the anniversary on this day of K3, as we called it then for a little while. Bill Legere, Andy Bartholomew, and Cheryl Snyder here in the studio with me. Hi, everyone.
Hello, Hi. Andy.
Andy was here.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Andy was in high school.
She was in class.
Tuning in my truck.
Yeah, right. Right, but I have some old pictures of that, and, like, you know, my kid Lydia and Haley are in the background of some of the pictures that were posted on Facebook today. But, yeah, Bill, let's talk a little. We'll even play a little bit of audio that we think is the start of K3. Yeah. We don't really know what's on the CD. But.
So what happened in late 2006, we purchased two commercial radio stations in Juneau. They were known then as Star and Magic. They were contemporary music formats, automated, run by a company in California, and it was kind of a fire sale, and it was an opportunity for us to expand service here. And so we converted these two commercial FM stations into non-commercial stations and created KXLL and KRNN and did distinctly separate programming on all three of the channels. So it's been 11 years now. Hard to believe.
That is hard to believe.
And it was a snowy Friday night 11 years ago.
We were all so young.
And just a little nostalgia. Do you remember what happened after the sign-on?
So we had this great party here down at the station. It was the halls here. They're kind of narrow as they are, but they were just packed with members of the community, and we had certain selected individuals, members who got to actually turn the switches for each of the stations, this big happy thing. And then everybody cleared out, and we were into this new paradigm of running three radio stations. And Andy, you and I were down here, and Darren, my husband, was here because he was doing the first volunteer-hosted show on KRNN. And within about that first hour, there was a power surge, and all of the stations went off the air. We had dead air on all these stations, and Andy, you and I were like scrambling, trying to figure out what to do.
Oh, that's right.
Try to get them back
up. We were
up
like, it's not going to work.
So that was about dead air for about 20 minutes, and then we recovered, and then we got notification that there was a tsunami warning, and we had this first time, this paradigm of how to interrupt all three radio stations to be giving information out through the night. So, it was just like initiation by fire.
And it ended up being 6 inches of tsunami that came through, right? It was very minor, but that's right. We had to do that.
There was a snowstorm, too, so maybe history will repeat itself tonight.
Yeah. Brace yourself. I think we've learned through the hard way how to recover from the power surges.
But talk a little bit about, Bill, it was a fairly revolutionary idea for a small station in a fairly small market to do this kind of service.
It was a time when public radio stations were trying to acquire additional channels to deliver more service. But nobody ever dreamed of having a station in a town of 30,000 people acquire two. So that was really big that we didn't get one more, we got two. And there was some skepticism about the economics of it, but it turned out really great. We borrowed money from the Juneau Economic Development Council to purchase the stations and to do the technical transition. We paid that loan off 5 years early. It was successful financially for us. It kind of grew KTOO to be really relevant and important in the community and got the base budget up. But it wasn't that much more expensive to add two more stations.
Yeah, we had the facility. This building was fairly large.
Yeah, we didn't build any new studios
or
anything.
Right.
And I always say it's like a movie theater with three screens. It's one popcorn stand and one guy selling tickets. So it's pretty economical to have three radio stations under one roof. And it worked out to be great.
But there has been a lot of technology change, and think about it, in that 11 years. I remember when we started KXLL, I remember meeting with both of you, and I remember the meeting we had, you were saying, well, what sort of website should we have? And I kind of said, I don't care about websites. Everything's on MySpace now. You got to be on MySpace.
That's right, yeah.
And that was sort of true for a couple years. And then, of course, it was Facebook. And then it was all the other social media. And then that has all grown. And then that now has become a major service delivery place. Mm-hmm. Now the web is all about another channel, another way of people getting this service. We also went through the digital radio kind of model. We thought these subcarriers of stations would be the future model. That kind of hasn't quite really panned out, even though that technology is viable. It isn't the way people are really consuming radio. They're consuming it the way they always have, but also online.
Was Napster happening in 2014?
It was over. I think the big Napster thing had already come and gone.
Metallica.
But the biggest change, of course, is that when we started KXLL and KRNM became, you know, this full music station, there wasn't Spotify and there wasn't Pandora. There weren't all these other services that people could, you know, easily access.
Annie, that's a big challenge now, right? You're charged with, like, making this playlist, right, that's on the air that people can consume and listen to and learn from all day long. But the competition is Spotify and Pandora. People are making their personal playlist every day, all day. So.
Oh, yeah, you've got Questlove from The Roots, who's made by Pandora.
Right.
Probably the best DJ of all time.
Right.
Planning out people's lives in many different algorithms. So at KXLL, it's still the same deal, music discovery. And I remember when I first came in for a show, I brought like a tote bag full of CDs. And they were very important to me at that time. But who owns CDs now?
Yeah, right.
I mean,
I think one of the big things that I've seen and that I'm really proud of the work that has been done by KRNN and KXLL as the two newer stations was that commitment to local music. And some different local music, you know, we've always been so strong in folk music and in bluegrass, and that's always been so awesome in Juneau. But I think that KXL and KRNN, with the concert music series that KRNN does, with all the great events that KXLL does, that's been exciting because now you've got this real stable of great local musicians, and you hear it all the time on KXLL. And that's not going to be on Pandora.
That's right.
And it's not anywhere else in here either.
Right.
I mean, if you want to be hearing the local musicians from this community, from Alaska, KXL and KRNN are your stations. Yeah.
And there were people who said Napster would kill radio and Pandora would and TV would kill radio back in the 50s. You know, I thought that was the end of radio.
Yeah,
you know what? Radio is really resilient. And all of these changes in technology, it's still relevant and meaningful, and it's in everybody's home and in their car and, you know, now we're on every mobile device. So it's turned out to be, you know, that radio's here for the long haul, I think.
We talk about the new stations when we made this change, but what changes did that facilitate for the flagship for KTOO?
Yeah, well, it meant we could devote all of the hours of the day to news and information on KTOO and add all those programs that people in Juneau had heard about but never could hear, like Fresh Air.
We used to get petitions that would go around, right?
That's right.
You've got to get Fresh Air. It's supposed to be so great. Or every time I'm in, you know, on the East Coast, I hear this great show. And that was always a struggle for you, Cheryl, as the program director.
How do we get these in? Yeah, at the time it was Talk of the Nation was on every single day, and so people were really clamoring to get that as a daily. Yeah, so it just opened up so much more airtime for all of this great talk programming for people.
Well, should we try to see what's on this?
Let's
we have a CD of the first. You're hesitant. Bill's hesitant.
Be ready to get rid of it if it's the wrong.
We have to dump it, but we think this
has not been heard for 11 years.
We think this is the first moments of K3 here. We're going to play this. Here.
Time is 4:48. You are tuned to KTOO FM in Juneau. With the forecast for tonight, snow accumulation about 3 inches. It's snow advisory will remain in effect until 1 a.m. tomorrow morning. And forecast for Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a 40% chance of snow.
Why are we even in here?
Well, we switch around the stations, so stand by, and then we'll be back in a few minutes.
We're going to have a music interlude.
Musical interlude. Here. Okay. So this was still the unified KTOO signal at this moment. This is the last moments of the unified KTOO.
Yeah, and I think it's the only time in the station's history that we simulcast on all three. It was during the launch.
Right. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Good evening. I'm Beth Weigel, Chair of the Board of Directors of Capital Community Broadcasting.
I'm Bill, the chair, president.
And my mic's not on.
Bill's off mic.
Off mic.
Tonight we're coming to you live from KTOO studios.
To tell him. He was never
Eagan Drive in downtown Juneau to officially launch three new public radio services for the capital city. Bill and I are here with a crowd of well-wishers listening here in the studios.
It's better
and
that
this
way.
Kickoff program is being simulcast on all three of our stations, as well as the internet. So we'd like to welcome
Maybe
all
you
of
recreate
you who
them.
Have tuned in tonight.
And in
Hold
just
on,
a few minutes, specially selected audience members will join us here to push three ceremonial buttons, kicking off three brand new public radio formats, KTOO News, Rain Country Radio, and Excellent Radio.
We'd like to take a minute to tell you about the programs on the three stations. In just a few minutes, 104.3 will become KTOO News, a new 24-hour news channel on KTOO FM at 104.3. going to be the one source on Juneau's radio dial for up-to-the-minute local, state, national, and international news and information delivered by the most trusted sources available. From NPR, the BBC, PRI, the CBC in Canada, APRN, and the KTOO news staff, listeners can count on substance, credibility, and accuracy from the widest variety of perspectives.
That all sounds accurate still, right?
Yeah, this goes on for a while. I don't know how much time you want to give to this. But,
We just got a couple of nonprofits out there that want to get in. I mean, you know, let's just, I'm just kidding.
We thought we would call KRNN Rain Country Radio. That didn't work. Didn't stay. People thought it meant that we had a country music station on the air.
And that was one that, we kind of didn't quite. Rain Country had long been this show that was on public broadcasting for us.
K3 is stuck, even though we only used it for a short period of time.
Yeah, that's right.
There's still people who call this whole thing K3.
Yeah, right. And that just is that's just a fun play on K2, so you can see where that would stick. Yeah. Well, what's it meant for you, Annie, as the newer member of the team? You've been program director over at KXL for about 4 years now or so, is that right?
Yeah, I think I was 22 when Cheryl first let me come aboard as assistant program director with Jesse and Jeff. I mean, this station's everything to me and to this community, and there's so much pride. And anytime I go anywhere and try to explain what we do here, people don't get it. They don't get that we can have two 24-hour NPR affiliate music stations on top of the news. And I just feel like we're so lucky to live here, where if you do produce local live music, we have a place for it. We have a home for it. We advocate for it. And this is just a really special thing. And I feel so lucky to be a part of it.
Well, any future, next 10 years, next 11 years, what they might hold?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it changes all the time. And in the DNA of KTOO, which is now over 40 years old, we've been in this constant technology flux from the beginning. You know, for a little 10-watt FM radio station, and then TV came along, and then the Internet and streaming and all of that. And so who knows what the next 10 years will bring.
Anything short term? Any stuff that's being worked on right now? I kind of think the facility itself has kind of been transformed over the last few years, too. A lot of that had to do with television, the F360 space, of course. And
yeah, we are hoping to refresh these studios that you're in. They were built in 1995, and we need to improve the sound quality and the air handling systems and just update them a little bit so they're more contemporary and more suited to the needs. We built these studios for one station, and now we have three stations, and we built these stations when we had two people in the news department, and now we have 15 people in the news department. So it's time now for a little bit of a refresh here after, it seems like only yesterday, but these studios are over 20 years old now.
And then the final thing, the structure of public broadcasting in Alaska is pretty unique, and we're part of Coast Alaska, which is a pretty unique and kind of a model for a lot of other places. Anything about structurally in Alaska or those kinds of things that have kind of on the out there?
I think the biggest thing is that that the Internet has broken down the territoriality of how far your transmitter reaches. So in the old days, this was our territory, and as far as we could see on the horizon to the next station, we couldn't hear them, they couldn't hear us. But that's all changed now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all in this environment where everybody has everything available to them, and we have to be responsive to that. We have many listeners and users of our services who aren't in Juneau now. And that's really kind of changed our whole paradigm here. And then the game today is collaboration, and so we're working with other like-minded public media organizations and NPR and even a newspaper now, the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, is part of our Alaska's Energy Desk team, and that's the other way we are headed, is to do collaborative media, collaborative journalism.
Well, there's so many people that kind of made it happen. I do want to acknowledge Mike Sakaris, who did so much technical work for us at the beginning and really figured out a lot of stuff that we didn't know how we were going to do it. And, of course, Jeff Brown is the producer of this show, but is the program director, who is the program director for KRNN and has done so much work for KTOO for so many years, and just want to acknowledge all the contributions
he's
made.
Well, of course, you, Andy, and Cheryl, who are you know, you were here at the creation.
Sure, yeah. And then obviously the entire crew here is needs to be thanked, and a lot of hard work went into this, but it seems to be working.
Didn't we lure you away from a high-paying state job?
You did.
To start.
You did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Yes.
How does that go for you?
He's telling me to wrap it up here. But thanks so much. And yes, the 11th anniversary of K3 and KTOO, KRNN, and KXLL, and looking forward to another 11 years of great listening. Thanks.
All right, thanks so much, you guys. Thanks so much.
We'll listen to a little more of it here. That's fun.
KTOO studios to help.
There's more of Bill. He loves it.
It's been an enormous project for KTOO, and there are a lot of people to thank, but we want to just hit on a few of them tonight.
That's right.
Make sure that we acknowledge some people who worked very hard.
This is Bird Note. Putting up a backyard feeder is a simple way to attract birds to your home all year long. But why do birds come to bird feeders? A big tube of black oil sunflower seeds hanging in the middle of a January snowscape isn't the most natural thing. So how do birds know to eat from it? First off, birds are adaptable. Suet cakes played no part in the evolution of birds. Yet as soon as you hang one up, the neighborhood chickadees, woodpeckers, and nuthatches find it quickly. Those evening grosbeaks at your feeder probably never ate sunflower seeds in nature. Sunflowers grow in open plains, while grosbeaks live in forests. But when they're presented with a new type of food, birds incorporate it into their diet with no hesitation. Second, many birds have a substantial capacity to learn. They learn by their own actions and those of the other birds they see. As some birds discover the feeder and become regular visitors, other birds witness and join in. Of course, many kinds of birds don't come to feeders. No one has developed a flycatcher feeder, and flycatchers get along just fine. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Did you miss our Midnight Oil podcast? It's not too late to take a spin with Alaska's Energy Desk through the highs.
People are like, do you really get paid for living there? And you're like, yeah. And you're like, dang, what'd I spend my PhD on?
And lows.
It really just happened to us. It was a classic boom bust. It was just classic.
Of Alaska's history as an oil state. Visit KTOO.org or subscribe to Midnight Oil wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, and Jim Beadle has joined me. Jim's going to be doing the fireside lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center tonight. He had to come in at the last second. I guess Mark Kelly had to postpone his talk.
Yeah, John Neary asked me to fill in for him.
Okay.
You know, I wish Mark met well, and I really would have liked to have seen his program. I hope he's there to do it again, you know, soon.
Sure.
I'd just like to remind people tonight, drive slow. Get there early.
Yeah, the roads are definitely getting messier and messier out there.
Mendenhall Visitor Center is an awesome place. Just go out there, enjoy yourself. First show starts at 6:30. Doors open at 6. Second show is at 8 p.m., and it's free. So drive slow, get there early, and enjoy yourself.
You're going to be talking about the Katmai National Park.
Yeah, an awesome place. This year, 2018, is the 100-year anniversary of the creation of the park.
Wow, that's really cool. And how many times have you gotten a chance to get out there?
I've been there 3 times.
Okay.
Once to Brooks Camp, which is, you know, it's an awesome place. It's a lot like the Mendenhall Visitor Center. They really want you viewing the bears on a platform. Otherwise, bears got the right-of-way. They want you 50 yards away, and they will move the visitors around to keep them 50 yards away from the bear.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Most of the time it's going to be spent on the outside coast along the Shilacoff Straits, where there are no barriers, there are no platforms, there's no people. Certain bears, the sows that have year-and-a-half-old cubs, really use the people as a barrier from the other bears, so they came right up closer than you ever imagined, and will be eating grass right in front of you for the trip of a lifetime.
And that's interesting. So they're obviously in the mode of really protecting their cubs, and they don't want other bears messing with them.
Because
that's kind of the idea.
The other bears, the big boars, the sows that have spring cubs, new cubs, they don't want to get that close to the people. So the big boars tend to stay a little further away, and the mothers with these one-and-a-half-year-old cubs use the people as protection against the big bears. Incredible to witness.
So you get in depth really close to these sows. With the,
down on my knees 10 feet away from a sow feeding in front of me, going, I sure hope my bear guide knows what she's doing.
Yeah, right. I mean, it must be nervous. There's some nervous moments, I would guess.
For people that live here in Southeast, you know, we're used to the ABC Islands and these big bears where you don't want to be getting close to them. You know, 50, 100 yards away, that's almost too close. This is just an incredible experience to be that close to bears and see them acting like you're not there. Their heads down, they're just eating grass, they're paying no attention to you, not looking at you, and they're 10 feet away.
Is there something about that area, that outside coast area, that attracts bears?
Well, huge salmon runs. So they're all these bears are down on the river valleys eating the sedges, waiting for the salmon to come in. So they're all gathered there waiting for the real, you know, protein to arrive, and they're just eating grasses and waiting for the salmon to return.
But
to the
table's set for them, right? Basically, so that's what's going on there.
And then tide flats. Hallow Bay has got huge tide flats. There's clams all over, and a low tide, they're down there digging clams.
Right. So. Yeah. Oh, really? So that's a really unique, or maybe not unique, but a really probably very interesting to watch them do that.
Yeah. just there's so many incredible opportunities to see. Unbelievable.
And then your presentation tonight, I'm guessing a ton of amazing photos, right? Close-up stuff.
I was out there yesterday making sure my computer worked with their equipment. They've got some awesome equipment at the Mendenhall Hall Visitor Center. I've got some video. 2015, there was lots of whales that died in the Gulf of Alaska, and this baby fin whale washed up on the beach. And I've got a video of 8 bears feeding on this baby fin whale. And imagine that 20-foot screen in the Glacier Mendenhall Visitor Center with this whale on the beach and 8 bears feeding on it. And we're in a boat, you know, maybe 20, 30 feet away, but it's full screen.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
What's
pictures.
Some of the dynamics of that group of 8 bears? Are they fighting? Are they all happy? Or
they have squabbles. There's 2 really big dominant male bears, 2 kind of medium-sized bear, and then a sow and a cub, believe it or not. I think the cub's probably about 2.5 years old. It's almost as big as a mama. But they're all feeding on this bear, but there's noise. They're screaming and yelling. But while we're there, I never once saw one put its paw on another one or bite another one. But there's some screaming and yelling and some dominance involved.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, so happening tonight starts at 7?
First show is 6:30.
Sorry, first show at 6:30, second show at 8 o'clock.
And it's free. Come and enjoy the visitor center. Like I say, drive slow, get there early, and enjoy the visitor center. It's an awesome place in itself.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for filling in. First of all, it's on short notice for the fireside lecture, and have a great show. It's in Katmai National Park once again, and Jim Beadle's going to be talking tonight at the Friday fireside lecture. 2 shows, 6:30 and 8 o'clock, and as you were saying, Jim, drive carefully as you go out there. Thanks so much for coming in and have a great couple of lectures tonight.
Hey, thank you, Randy.
Okay. welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And with me in the studio right now, Wayne Price from United Way. Wayne, thanks so much for coming in.
Stevens,
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I don't know why I said that.
You can call me anything except okay. Late for dinner.
Well, maybe not anything. But Wayne Stevens, sorry so much.
Sorry
about that. But here from United Way, we want to talk a little bit about Pick, Click, Give. And we were trying to get Sophia Fouquet on the phone there, but we're not getting through on the phone line. But let's talk a little bit about that, a very important and generous program that people can participate in through the Permit Fund.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Pick, Click, Give is in its sixth or seventh year now. It's just a great way for individuals to engage in philanthropy. You know, business around this community, around the state, are exceptionally generous, and it's just a way to engage individuals in the art and act of philanthropy. And the dividend ebbs and flows, but the need by the 650 or so nonprofits doesn't go away. And so it's just it's an easy way when you're filling out your dividend application to pick one of your favorite agencies, and there are dozens of them in this community. I want to say there's probably 60 or so right here in Juneau that that are participants in the Pick, Click, Give program. I serve on the 4-Acre Operations Board, and 4-Acre has worked with the Rasmussen Foundation and now the Alaska Community Foundation to manage the Pick, Click, Give process. And it's just a great way to encourage and engage people in the art and act of philanthropy.
And what are some of the organizations that people might be surprised that are on Pick, Click, Give, right? It has expanded so much, hasn't it, through the years?
Yeah. I want to say the first year there were a couple of hundred. It's expanded to include the university campuses now. There's like 675 different organizations that qualify to participate, and the agencies, depending upon their effort to let people know they're on the list. I'm trying to think how to say this, but if you look at the contributions to the homeless shelters and the animal mm-hmm. humane society groups. They're way off the deep end in contributions, and then you look at the university campuses, and they don't get so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so, sort of wide range of of contributions that are presented to, and you know, just looking at the list, the Juno Raptor Center, the Ski Club, the Symphony, Youth Services, Youth Wrestling, KTOO, KRNN, United Way, SAIL. Association for Life, Alaska Folk Festival, wide range of nonprofits.
So when people are looking at that big list, is there an easy and convenient way for them to find out more about that organization as they're looking through that list?
Yeah, this year Pick, Click, Give has put a new tool on the website, and when you get in there, you can sort of pick a region, Southeast, Juneau, you can drill down, and then you can type in a couple of you know, if you're interested in animals or health and social services or animal rescue, and I forget all of the different ways you can drill down, but you can get to a smaller list than one by one through the 670 or so organizations on the list.
Is there advice you'd give to people about when they're thinking about what organization to give to, things to consider or things to think about?
Well, I would encourage people to, you know, the organizations that they participate in as volunteers, the organizations that their family participates in, if you're a member of the Ski Club or your Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, or if you're in a wrestling club, or, you know, support the organizations that you participate in. And it's just an easy way to continue to support those organizations. And as the climate of giving changes, as the climate for grants and grant funding changes, it's just a great way to continue to support those organizations that are important to you and your family.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like found money, right? So it's kind of like, okay,
ultimately.
That's a net bonus, even if I give a little bit of it to an organization,
right.
10% or something
and
like that goes
you know,
to an organization.
There's, 600 or so thousand potential applications each year, and if everybody gave a little, it'd be a lot.
Yeah.
And at this point, I think there's only about 5% of the filers actually participate in Pick, Click, Give. So, you know, part of the hope is to grow that 5% into a larger number of individuals participating in the program.
Yeah. Well, let's give a little bit of a pitch to United Way, the organization that you're with. What are some of the things you guys are working on right now that people might be interested in?
We have taken over management of the AmeriCorps program, and we're just bringing on our seventh volunteer for this class, and then we'll start in February or March recruiting for next year's class of volunteers. So if there's a nonprofit out there that would be interested in connecting with us about the program and how they would get an AmeriCorps volunteer to serve at their organization, surely give us a call at 463-5530. We continue our work with CORE and the Reading Tutor Program. We've got tutors, volunteers in the schools at three elementary schools, reading with kids in the kindergarten through second grade range, trying to make sure they're up to reading at grade level. Reading is certainly one of those skills that without, it's difficult to get a job, it's difficult to graduate, and reading is a life skill that once you've got it, it's pretty hard to take it away from you. So.
Yeah, and that's such a multiplier benefit for everyone in the community. You have someone who's a reader instead of someone who isn't, and that's
a
huge,
huge
benefit.
Huge benefit.
Yeah.
You know, so we're, as is often the case, got our fingers in lots of little processes and projects, appreciate the support of many in the community, and Pick, Click, Give is just one more way to support organizations. And this isn't about United Way and Pick, Click, Give. This is about getting people to take a hard look at making a small contribution. You know, if you figure there's 600,000 applicants, and if we get $10 from all of them, do the math.
Yeah.
Doesn't take long to get to $6 million.
That math is easy to do. Wayne, thanks so much for coming and letting us know
you,
about
Andy.
It. That's Pick, Click, Give, and it's happening once again as the PFD program rolls on.
Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
President said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist.
Some lawmakers criticized President Trump's disparaging comments about African countries in Haiti, but still want an immigration deal.
For Friday, January 12th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Kelly McEvers.
And I'm Ari Shapiro. Coming up.